We will hear an address by Harold E. Sasson, Republican nominee for governor, at the American Legion Hall in the city of Mankato, at an open meeting sponsored by a committee of the delegates of the convention. Mr. Roy Ranion, president of the Paper Workers Union at Cloquet and delegate to the convention, is presiding at the meeting. Mr. Ranion.
Mr. Sasson, ladies and gentlemen, and our radio audience, it is a distinct privilege to appear on this platform with our honored guest, Mr. Harold E. Sasson, candidate for governor of the state of Minnesota. I wish to introduce to you this evening Mr. James L. Kelly of White Bear, Minnesota, vice president of the International Brotherhood of Firemen and Oilers. Mr. Kelly will introduce our speaker of the evening. Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sasson, and folks with your radios tuned to this broadcast, as well as the delegates and visitors to the 56th Annual Convention of the Minnesota State Federation of Labor and Friends. The steamroller tactics of our convention this afternoon, with the president of the Federation, who is himself on the public payroll, and who has a relative on the state payroll, denying the right to speak against endorsement resolution of the present governor, and the article, the act in railroading the endorsement through before our speaker's address tonight, was not only a disgusting violation of free speech, but was also the greatest confession of weakness, the corrupt state political machine that I have witnessed in this campaign. I believe that if the vote were by ballot, at least one half of the delegates at our convention are actually opposed to the endorsement of any candidate. And they were denied the opportunity of expressing their views by the high-handed tactics of a public employee. This is an outstanding example of the need to keep the labor movement free of political entanglement. I am deeply honored by being granted the privilege of introducing the next speaker. I have been a member of organized labor since I started working for a living, and that is quite a few years ago. In my capacity as international officer, I contact a great many people from all walks of life, and in doing so, I have developed a good judgment of my fellow man. And I will stake my life on the sincerity and honesty of the man who is to deliver the principal address here this evening. His knowledge of unionism is far greater than that usually encountered among men except those connected with labor in an official capacity. Perhaps this is in part due to the fact that he has two brothers who are active workers of the trade union movement. I can visualize the arguments and discussions between the rising young lawyer and his two brothers. The knowledge gained through such associations has given the next speaker a deep and sympathetic understanding of the problems confronting labor. With a man of this caliber in the governor's chair of the state of Minnesota, labor is assured of a friendly hearing from one who understands its problems and will champion its aims. The labor platform advocated by the speaker of the evening is one of the most comprehensive and progressive platforms ever offered by a political party in the history of Minnesota. May I present the man who will be the next governor of Minnesota, Mr. Harold Sasson.
Mr. Kelly, delegates to the state convention of the Minnesota Federation of Labor and Friends, I was pleased to accept the invitation from a committee of your delegates to speak here in Mankato during the convention of the Minnesota Federation of Labor. I appreciated this opportunity because I desired to give to you, frankly and plainly, my views of the problems of the state as they affect you. I have read the report of your able secretary, Mr. George Lawson, in the press yesterday afternoon. I noted there two outstanding facts in that report. The first two of these facts was encouraging. It was his report that in the past year, your membership has increased by 10,000. I congratulate you upon that growth. I congratulate you because I believe that the sound future of labor rests in sound organization, behind constructive leadership. And I believe that on the whole, the leadership of the American Federation of Labor in Minnesota has been sound and constructive. Your increasing membership constituted an added force for the social and economic advancement of the people of the state. Last evening, while driving in from the Lacqui-Parle County Fair at Madison, I listened to my opponent, the present governor, in his address to you. I was surprised to hear in his address no word of congratulation or commendation to you of the American Federation of Labor upon your splendid growth and your contribution to progress. The second outstanding fact is the report to your convention. It was not so encouraging. It was the report that in the last year, during this present state administration, the number of unemployed members of your union had sharply increased from 5% to 16%, and the number employed only part-time had increased from 7% to 11%. In listening to the present governor last night, I was also surprised to hear no mention of this increase in unemployment and no mention of any effort to secure more jobs for your members in Minnesota. This great increase in unemployment of your members has been accompanied by a sharp increase in general unemployment in Minnesota. 2 years ago, before this administration took office, there were 135,000 men and women of Minnesota registered as unemployed. And tonight, there are 210,000 of our fellow citizens seeking work. If I become your governor, from my first day in office, more jobs for the men and women of Minnesota will be the watchword of our administration. There are three principal sources for more jobs in Minnesota. They rest first with the expansion of those industries now in the state, many of which are of national scope, built up through the ingenuity and foresight of native sons of Minnesota. These industries are constantly developing new products and new markets. We must encourage them to locate their new plants and new branches and add to their roles of wage earners here within our borders. We must also actively invite to come into the state new factories. There is at present a trend to decentralize some of the national manufacturing concerns in the east and to locate regional factories in various parts of the nation. Minnesota, by its natural location, with its high type of workmen and splendid transportation facilities and outstanding natural resources, should receive many of these new regional plants if the disadvantages that now exist are improved and if an act of interest on the part of the government in the location of these plants in Minnesota is demonstrated. Likewise, here in Minnesota, we have men with the inventive genius and the initiative to develop new business. We have here in our state the means of backing these new activities. Sons of Minnesota in our communities should be encouraged to enter into new enterprise here within our borders, and to furnish wages for the unemployed people rather than to go to distant states for their activities. The state capital in St. Paul must be made the clearinghouse and the spark plug for the development of jobs instead of being the dark cloud that sends men elsewhere to seek the sunshine that makes possible the successful conduct of a business and the meeting of a payroll that changes unemployed homes into happy homes. Next in importance to the problems of the advancement of the strength of your organization and the securing of more jobs for your members is the matter of civil service for state and county employees. And may I say that unlike my opponent, in speaking to you of civil service, I do not consider that I am digressing. For real civil service must be the cornerstone of any administration sincerely interested in serving the people. It shall be our cornerstone. I declared for civil service in the opening address of the primary campaign, now almost a year ago. A strong plank, without weasel words, has been written into our state platform. In our administration of state affairs, we would put civil service into effect with respect for the spirit as well as the letter of the law. The attitude of an administration in the handling of civil service is of the utmost importance. The governor said last night that, and I quote, it was unfortunate that two civil service bills were proposed in the last legislature. I agree with him. I also wish to point out how it happened that two civil service bills were introduced in the last session of the legislature. To do so, I quote from the legislative report of your legislative committee of the Minnesota Federation of Labor submitted to your convention last year. In this report, we find this statement of fact. I quote, on December 1936, President Cunningham, in conference with Governor Benson, brought up the subject of a state civil service law. And he was advised by the governor that he, the governor, did not intend to sponsor such a measure and that the Federation's proposal would have his support. I still quote, upon receipt of the report of the committee of the State Employees Union, however, in January, information reached President Cunningham that there was a bill to be introduced, sponsored by the governor. He advised the representatives of the State Employees Union to this effect and suggested that a committee representing that group confer with the governor as to the accuracy of this rumor. A committee composed of Mr. James M. Clancy, Al Parker, and Frank Novak, representing the Minnesota State Employees Union No. 10, called upon the governor and reported that he had no such bill in contemplation. However, on February 10th, a bill known as House File 710 was introduced and was thereafter known in the legislature as the governor's proposal. The action, and I quote, the action of the Cloquet Convention instructing its officers to secure civil service for state employees was defeated by the leadership of the House. And the leadership of the House, referred to in the report, was the henchmen of the governor. And the means of defeating the bill, which the Senate passed and which was accepted by the representatives of the unions involved, was the bill known as the governor's proposal, introduced after the governor had agreed and promised not to have a bill introduced. The ruin of civil service in the last session of the legislature lie directly on the doorstep of the present state administration, and they cannot be swept off. The present administration defeated and took away from the state employees these fundamental rights of labor. The American Federation of Labor has for years conducted a campaign against the employment agencies of the old type, of one coming, one working, and one going, and a fee for the agency on every job. By killing civil service, the bosses of the machine have been able to carry on with their percentage collections from state employees, the same type of practice which the Federation has fought against for years in private employment agencies. The result is economic slavery for state employees under the slang expression, kick in or else. In the matter of state employment, we shall, however, make one requirement of public employees, and that is this. Anyone who, instead of serving the people of the state, is actively engaged in supporting either communism or fascism will not be permitted on the public payrolls of the state of Minnesota. Neither shall we place as personnel directors of any of our state departments men who seek to undermine the sound labor movement for the advantage of the left wing. The fundamental principles of my attitude toward organized labor have been developed through my personal experience and association. In giving you tonight these fundamental principles, I speak briefly of this background of personal experience. In 1933, we experienced at South St. Paul one of the first of the labor strikes in recent years, when the employees of one of the packing plants went on strike. This was prior to the truck driver's strike of Minneapolis. Some of the men of industry conferred with the sheriff and with me as county attorney of Dakota County and suggested that a large number of men be deputized and a number of large trucks be used to open the picket lines on the street. We replied 5 years ago that to do so would cause bloodshed and violence and bitterness for many years to come, and it would be unfair to the men who were on strike. Instead, we held conferences of the 19 leaders of the various departments of the union, endeavoring to work out a peaceful solution of the difficulty. The organizers of the strike were three men known to many of you. They were Morris Red Carson, communist candidate for mayor of Minneapolis at one time, William Schneiderman, now state secretary of the Communist Party of California, and Norman Horowitz of Pittsburgh. These men opposed any proposal of arbitration or of peaceful settlement of the difficulty. But on the sixth night of the strike, in a conference, the leaders of the union repudiated the leadership and interference of these outside communists and agreed to a settlement of the strike. The following day, a number of the leaders of the union were blacklisted by the company. I represented those blacklisted employees in presenting to the Labor Relations Board under the NRA Act a complaint against the company for violating Section 7A, and conducted the hearings for the blacklisted employees without compensation. The company was found guilty of violation of the law and was ordered to reinstate the men. Since that time, Since that time, labor relations in our industrial center at South St. Paul have been good, with minor exceptions that have been worked out peacefully. A third strike occurred in one of our industrial plants when the woodenware workers went out on a strike. And on this occasion, again, the question of a blacklist came up and the right to organize and bargain collectively. And on this occasion, I appeared at the request of the union as a witness before the Wagner Labor Relations Board. A year ago, I attended as a spectator the public meeting in the Minneapolis Armory conducted by the CIO in connection with the machinist union dispute. That meeting was in the Minneapolis arena. There I heard William Mousseff and Congressman John Bernard and other speakers condemn the American Federation of Labor Leaders as reactionaries and traitors to labor, and praise the governor in his support of the CIO and urge the raiding of American Federation of Labor Unions. I followed the stormy course of the jurisdictional dispute in the Machinist Union and the subsequent loss and suffering and damage to the union movement among the machinists by reason of that dispute. From this background and from my studies, I arrived at certain fundamental principles from the standpoint of government in relation to organized labor. I believe that a state administration should lend its best efforts to the improvement of labor relations and to reducing to a minimum the number of strikes and lockouts and loss of wages and suffering, and to stabilize the relations between labor and capital. A sound basis for improved relations between labor and capital cannot be secured by preaching class hatred, intolerance, and bitterness. It can best be secured by full recognition of the rights of labor to organize, to bargain collectively through representatives of its own choice, and to require full responsibility on both sides of the contract that are entered into. Our administration will seek, with the cooperation of leaders of labor and of industry, a sound labor relations law. Our administration will respect the trade union movement as an economic movement and will not seek to make of it the tail of a political kite. Neither shall we seek to prostitute your organization by reaching into your ranks with the insidious hand of patronage. We shall never permit the National Guardsman's bayonet to be used as an employer's weapon to crush those who labor, and neither shall we give to the irresponsible left wing of labor the support of the state government in its attempt to undermine the sound movement of labor built through years of constructive leadership. I, of course, am aware that the governor's henchmen asked for an endorsement at your hands. I observe that they appealed for an endorsement not on the basis of anything that they have accomplished in these past 2 years, and not on the basis of any program for labor in the next 2 years, for they have presented none, but rather by saying that the party which they dominate is your party, and by reciting the history of its development. You know that actually that party is no longer your party. Where are the men who built the party and who presented its ideals and principles? Some are gone. Most of the others are now on the outside looking in, and the rest have been relegated to the third and fourth ranks. And where was the small group of radical bosses that now control the party when these early foundations were laid? They were not in your movement, and they were not in the farm organization. They have moved in the past 2 years and taken control of the party away from you and away from the rank and file and away from the principles of its founders. And now they send their spokesman to you and ask your help in strengthening their selfish grasp upon the party they took from you. They remind me of the hitchhikers who threw out the driver and the passengers from their car, who turned the car on a strange highway, who joyrided madly about the country, who laughed at the predicament of the car owners until finally the gas ran out and the tires wore down and the pistons began to knock. And then they added insult to injury by saying to the original drivers and passengers, "This is your car. Get behind and push." And still they make no promise of turning the wheel back to the driver or even making room for the original passengers in the car. Friends, tonight I extend to you a standing invitation to join with us in support of liberal measures for the progress of labor and of the general welfare of the people of this state as an economic movement in accordance with your traditions. And we shall look to you, the Minnesota Federation of Labor, an affiliate of the American Federation of Labor, to be a powerful, constructive force for future progress in this great state of Minnesota. I thank you.
You have just heard from Harold E. Stassen, Republican nominee for governor of Minnesota, who has spoken to you from Mankato, where the state Federation of Labor is in three-day convention. The open meeting which Mr. Stassen addressed was sponsored by a committee of the delegates of this convention. Your announcer, Don Jacobs.
Transcribed. This program has originated through the facilities of KYSM, Mankato, Minnesota.
Ladies and gentlemen, this political address by Mr. Harold E. Stassen, candidate for governor of the state of Minnesota, has been presented through the facilities of WEBC Duluth, with studios in Duluth and Superior. The correct Central Standard Time...